just remembering that the first time Jerry and I met was on a green field outside UCLA somewhere. I was doing a program for PBS on dreams. And one of the things that we were looking at was the whole notion of narcolepsy. So I remember being with Jerry and watching this dog of his, the lab's dog, gleefully gambling across the fields, and then suddenly it would just collapse in a little heap. And it was extraordinary to watch this this moment of narcolepsy. So I don't know whether you're going to go into that with today, but...
No, I wasn't going to talk about narcolepsy, which is a little ironic because it's the one thing that we can say we now understand that back then we didn't understand at all.
Well, perhaps you can tell me afterwards.
I'll be dealing with the things that we don't understand. So Roger asked me to give a background, a sort of basic background on what sleep is, which is what I will attempt to do. So there are standard criteria that most people in the field, I would say, agree with. Sleep is a state characterized by reduced motor activity, decreased response to stimulation, or an elevated threshold for responding to stimulation. Stereotypic postures. We all sleep in bed in a particular posture, and most animals sleep that way, either underground or in a tree or in a den of some sort. relatively easy reversibility to distinguish it from coma or hibernation, and rebound with deprivation. And this is a particularly important criterion because it really indicates the importance of sleep, or suggests the importance of sleep. When animals are disturbed in a way that prevents them from sleeping, they accumulate a sleep need, which takes precedence over other behaviors which you would think would have obvious survival value. So if an animal is stressed and in a dangerous situation over a period of time, the last thing you would want from a survival standpoint is increased sleep. You would think that a sleep would have evolved to be able to be suspended at times like this. And the fact that at least in some animals we have this rebound is really what's behind the whole paradox of sleep and the mystery of sleep. What is it that's happening that's so important that evolution has caused this rebound to occur and take precedence against other things that it would seem have a greater survival importance? Now, the other question is, do all animals sleep by these criteria? Now, human sleep, I think we all agree with this, and I think these criteria are really criteria that fit humans perfectly, but it's not so clear that these criteria fit other animals. And I mentioned this and really put this slide in here because I've certainly seen in the media people quoted as saying all animals sleep, as if that was a well-established fact. But I don't believe it is. By the criteria that I've mentioned, I would say probably about 20 species have been shown to fulfill these criteria, particularly the rebound criteria. In work that we've done, which I'll be talking about in my next talk, we've shown that marine mammals, in fact, don't fulfill most of the requirements for sleep. They're not immobile. Certain species are never immobile, never unresponsive, and don't show rebound. And so you can say, as some have said, that, okay, well, that's just the way they sleep. It just doesn't look like sleep. It doesn't have any of the characteristics of sleep, but they're really asleep, which I think is an illogical position. In fact, their behavior differs fundamentally from other behaviors, and that has to be taken into account in any general theory of sleep, any idea that all animals need sleep and sleep is preserved in this way. And before we make statements about all animals, we have to study at least some large subsample. And I do think that 20 is about the number. Now, more animals, maybe 100 animals, have had their sleep observed, but haven't had, haven't been checked for responsiveness, rebound, etc. And there are probably about 15,000 other vertebrate species that haven't been looked at all, and many orders haven't been examined. So I think we have to be very careful about saying all animals sleep. Well, you know, do all fish sleep? Do all worms sleep, etc.? Do all animals have REM sleep? Well, certainly that's not the case in all animals. REM sleep has been observed in placental marsupial and monotreme mammals, monotremes being egg-laying mammals. There are only three in existence now. The two species of REM is the state that was discovered by Asarinsky and Kleitman in 1953. It's a state within sleep where there are rapid eye movements, where brainwave activity looks very much like waking activity. there are aphasic events, twitching, and the most interesting aspect is that in humans, dreams are reported when people are awakened from REM sleep, and very vivid dreams. In non-REM sleep, there may be some mentation reported, but it's typically not the kind of vivid dreams that we have. Males have erections in REM sleep. there's great variation in blood pressure and heart rate within REM sleep. So it's a state in which the brainstem is highly activated. And it's also a state in which brain metabolism is quite high at the same level as it is in waking, whereas in non-REM sleep, it's at the lowest level of the day. And so the paradox of sleep is compounded for REM sleep because it's a state in which the brain is not resting, in which energy is being used by the brain, and for reasons that we don't really understand. Now, REM sleep has not been observed in cetaceans, dolphins, and whales, and it's been looked for. So again, if it exists in a state that is so different from REM in other animals that it's really not the same state. we continue to look for REM sleep, but certainly every measure that we look at, we look at erections in males, we look at twitching, signs of rapid eye movements, signs of brain activity that are unusual, that would occur after non-REM sleep. And by all these criteria, we don't see REM sleep. REM sleep has not been observed in reptiles, in fish, or in insects. There have been some early reports in the literature, but these haven't been replicated. And I think as the investigations have become more careful, it becomes less convincing that there's any state that looks like REM sleep. We did a study in the turtle in which we recorded unit activity from the part of the brain that we know that generates REM sleep, and we saw no kind of activation resembling that seen in REM sleep. So it doesn't occur in all animals. And again, we have 15,000 other species that haven't been looked at. I'm sure there will be other exceptions apart from marine mammals. So this is a figure just showing REM sleep in various animals. And the main point of the figure is that there's nothing unusual about REM sleep in humans, or for that matter, about total sleep in humans. So humans get about 2 hours of REM sleep. All the species on the left get more. All the species on the right get less. As I was just discussing, the bottlenose dolphin does not appear to have any REM sleep, as is the case with other cetaceans. So that, at this point, all cetaceans would fall in this box, less than 2/10 of an hour, and quite possibly no REM sleep. At the other extreme, we have the platypus, which has 8 hours a day of REM sleep. And the question you want to ask yourself as you look at this figure is what distinguishes the animals that have high REM sleep from the animals that have low REM sleep? And it's not clear. And I think a particularly interesting pair to look at is the guinea pig and the guinea baboon. They have exactly the same sleep parameters. Presumably, they don't have similar intellectual function. They don't have similar lifespan. They don't live in similar environments, yet they have the same amount of REM sleep and of total sleep. And there are many other examples like this. So it is not at all obvious what makes for high and low amounts of REM sleep. Now, sleep deprivation has really created a lot of the current literature on sleep, following up on the observations of Rechtschaffen and his colleagues, at least one of whom is in the audience. This disc over water technique is a technique of gently depriving rats of sleep, but for long periods of time. You have two animals hooked up to a polygraph. The experimental animal is used to trigger rotation of this disc whenever it goes into sleep, as detected by the computer. The control animal and the experimental animal have to walk to keep from falling in the water whenever the experimental animal starts going into sleep. So it's a good control for environment, for motor activity, but the experimental animal gets sleep deprived, not completely, but certainly greatly sleep deprived, and the control animal has much less sleep deprivation. And by most criteria, it's not as stressful as some other means of sleep deprivation, and the stress is to some extent controlled. And this deprivation creates a syndrome, including thermoregulatory disturbances. The animals prefer to be in very warm environments, but if they're allowed to be in very warm environments, their condition deteriorates towards the end of a 2 to 3 week deprivation period. Their temperature begins falling. They develop skin lesions, debilitated appearance. They have increased food intake and weight loss. Al Rechtschaffen liked to tell the story of how he was called by Vogue magazine, which wanted to do a story on this because it seemed like the ideal dieting regimen. It's not so ideal if you see what the rat looks like. plasma norepinephrine goes up, thyroxin goes down. We've shown that there's some subcortical damage, but really it's kind of minimal and it only occurs near the end. There's no damage to the cortex. We've seen this, and Cirelli and Tononi have seen that there's no damage to the cortex. So with all this emphasis on sleep for cortical function, in fact, the only evidence for any damage is subcortical, and it's really minor. And finally, in 2 to 4 weeks, the animals die. In terms of it being a good diet, if you want to endure all of this, you'll lose weight. Now, Roger mentioned this sleep deprivation experience. This is a film of that shot by Bill Dement. And so this is Randy Gardner at the end of 11 days. Now, at this point, the rats are going downhill really rapidly. and this is Randy Gardner. He does continue to hold the world record, as far as I know, for sleep deprivation. This is him playing basketball at 11 days. He didn't have any dire effects. His intellectual function was normal. There was no amnesia. He was very tired. at the end of this period, he slept for 14 hours and was essentially back to normal. And presumably, he is still living in San Diego. Now, this is not to say that sleep deprivation is completely benign. And certainly the sleepiness is a great danger to the individual and to society. This is an example of someone who has a sleep apnea. You can see his thick neck, and he's falling asleep while he's driving. So I don't mean to minimize the importance of sleep, even while we don't understand quite what it does and why it varies so much.
Why was he filming himself?
This was a taxi company. They just put cameras. You know, these days you can have cameras everywhere, and I'm sure the thousands of hours were taken before they got this gem. So sleep time in humans is not correlated with IQ, either positively or negatively. Certainly there are anecdotal evidence that some geniuses sleep a lot. There's also evidence that some geniuses sleep very little, and presumably there are a lot of geniuses that sleep the normal amount. But in statistical comparisons, there's no correlation between IQ or level of achievement and amount of sleep, or amount of REM sleep, or percent of sleep time devoted to REM sleep. Sleep time in humans is not linearly correlated with health or lifespan. I think Dan Kripke is going to be presenting here, and this is his work, but I'm just mentioning it. In fact, there's an optimal amount of sleep, about 7 hours, and people who get more or less have relatively shorter lifespans, but the most interesting thing to come out of this epidemiological study is that it seems more of a risk factor to have more than 7 hours of sleep than it is to have less. So it's not just a general benefit. Now, you know, we can discuss that at length, why that might be. It does not seem that it's sleep apnea. But I think, and in a room filled with sleep experts, I'm sure someone will correct me, that I don't know of any evidence that increasing sleep time produces health benefits. And we do have this epidemiological evidence that suggests that at the extremes, high sleep time is actually detrimental, and it might be beneficial for some people to cut back on sleep, which is counterintuitive and sort of goes against the wisdom of the field. But I think as scientists, we have to look at the evidence and see that there is at least some evidence for that. And we can't assume that more sleep is better, just as we can't assume that whenever you're hungry, you should eat, you know, that more food is better because no food is bad for you. One thing that is quite clear is that sleep time in humans is negatively correlated with age. Sleep is maximal at birth, and REM sleep is the largest percentage of total sleep time at birth, and it decreases with age. However, this is not a universal feature because just the reverse relationship holds for dolphins and killer whales. And, you know, this is some recent work that we've done, but it's very, very clear that to the extent that they show sleep behavior or rest behavior, it's maximal as adults and minimal after birth. So my conclusion is that there's a lot we don't know, but presumably we'll find out in the next 2 days. Thank you very much.
Great, thanks, Jerry. I did remember looking some stuff about Randy Gardner, and although there were no major defects, I did remember reading that he was asked to count down from 100 in steps of 7. This was on the last day, I think, and he was counting down, got to 65 and stopped dead. And I think Bill Dement was there and asked him, why did you stop? And he said, I've forgotten what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing.
No, I think there's no argument that performance is incredibly degraded by sleep deprivation. The question is...
Wait a minute, you just said that it wasn't 10 minutes ago. You
said that 300 yards for 14 days without sleep.
This is not going on.
Excuse me, you just said a second. You just said two different things. One, you said there's no argument that there's a decrease in intellectual function. But during your talk, you said after 14 days that he had no deterioration in intellectual function.
Well, Bill Dement.
So those are not consistent.
Well, I think it's no. Bill Dement tells the story of how Randy Gardner was beating the people who were watching him at chess up until the end. The problem is staying awake, which certainly interferes with any kind of intellectual performance that he... we all know you get sleepy. You can't concentrate and can't be attentive. But when motivated, as he was in playing basketball at the end, he did quite well. So, I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't sleepy. I'm just saying, that he was able to perform well when motivated for short periods of time. And this is has been the standard story about sleep deprivation, that it depends on the task. If you can do something in short bursts and are highly motivated, even after long periods of sleep deprivation, you can function at a high level. But any kind of continuous activity, any kind of vigilance task, performance is degraded.
So there's a lot of these issues are going to come up later, and what we'd like to do is to get a few of the talks in, then the speakers will come down to the panel and you can ask them questions there, and we'll just have a conversation about it. But in the interim, thanks very much, Jerry.